covered in the last verse 18. As you all recall, that Arjuna has asked Krishna for 6 clarifications. And out of the 6 clarifications, Krishna has already answered Kshetra, Kshetrajna, Jnanam and Jnayam. So 4 have been answered by Krishna, and balance left is Prakriti and Purusha. Thus, in up to the last verse 18, Krishna already answered 4 of the clarifications that Arjuna wanted, and he summarized this in verse number 18 when he said that iti kshetram, the kshetram I have talked about, tatha also jnanam I have talked about. And what is kshetram? Kshetram is nothing but matter. Everything in this creation is made up of the 5 elements, and it all falls under kshetram, like this body, this mind and everything else in creation. So Krishna says, I have talked about kshetram. I have also talked about jnanam. What is jnanam? 20 qualities we need in order to prepare the mind, in order to gain the knowledge. So the 20 virtues or qualities that we have to we have to cultivate, these 20 values or qualities. So that also Krishna says, I have talked about. And once you have these 20 values or qualities in you, what is the object of knowledge? Is Jnayam. In the second line you see the word Jnayam. Jnayam is the goal that which we should know. So Jnayam is that consciousness or that Brahman, which Krishna described the nature of that in the verses 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. So up to 13 to 17, Krishna described Jnayam, that is the goal, that is to attain God. What is God? He described in those verses. And he says, all that I have spoken about. So uktam samasataha. Samasataha means briefly, I have spoken to you. Uktam means spoken. I have spoken to you briefly about all these topics. Now, what is thus the result of knowing this? What is the result of knowing this? He says, mat bhakta, any devotee of mine, vijnaya, who knows this. Knows what? What should the devotee of Lord come to know? You should know about matter. You should know about consciousness. You should know the difference between matter and consciousness. And having known the difference between matter and consciousness, what should be your conclusion? So when you say, who am I? Ultimately, what is the conclusion you should reach? I am not matter, but I am the eternal witness consciousness. Such a devotee, mad bhakta, vijnaya, who knows what? Etat. Etat meaning the difference between matter and consciousness. Who knows about this very clearly. What is the result? Mad bhavayo papatyate. Mad bhavayo papadyate. Upapadyate means becomes qualified. Upapadyate becomes qualified to be mad bhavam, my very nature. Meaning we become one with that all-pervading consciousness. We identify ourselves with that all-pervading consciousness. So the first stage, as I told you, before we have this knowledge, we say, I am this body. Then we go to the next stage where we say what? I am this body which has consciousness. And then we come to the third level. I am the consciousness which has this temporary body. So I am the consciousness, the permanent eternal consciousness which has this temporary body. And ultimately we come to the fourth stage when we say what? I am that consciousness which is the same consciousness everywhere. So that is what he is saying. Mat avayo upapadyate. You become qualified to attain my nature. You attain that oneness with the universal consciousness. And that in effect actually means moksha or self-liberation already. you are fit to attain moksha. So up to that he has summarized what he has covered. Now the last two topics he has to cover in from verses 19 to 23. He will speak about Purusha and Prakriti. Okay. Now in chapter 7, Krishna spoke about the two types of Prakriti. Do you remember what were the two types of Prakriti in chapter 7? One he called as Apara Prakriti, which means the lower Prakriti, and one is the Para Prakriti. So he identified Prakriti as Apara and Para, the lower and the higher. And the lower Prakriti, you must understand, it contains, it is matter, and it also contains the three gunas. So this we must be very clear. The lower Prakriti is matter which contains the three gunas. And this combination of matter plus the three gunas is what we call as Maya. This whole creation is Maya. It is matter plus the three gunas. Okay. And in chapter 13, Krishna is just, or rather Arjuna using different terms. Para Prakriti consciousness is known as Kshetrajna. It's one and the same. It's just different terminology. In chapter 7, what Krishna called Para Prakriti consciousness, in this chapter is called Kshetrajna, the knower of the field, the consciousness. Okay. And Apara Prakriti, the lower Prakriti, which is matter, in this chapter is called what? Kshetra, which is the field or matter. Okay. And what we also learned in chapter 7 is that this whole creation is a combination of the two Prakritis, Para and Apara. Everything in this creation is a combination of these two Prakritis, which is one is sentient and one is insentient. Okay. Now, therefore, what Krishna is going to describe is these two Prakritis with just two different terminology. So, Prakriti is the, what he calls Prakriti here means is called Apara Prakriti. What is Purusha is called Para Prakriti. Okay? It's one and the same, only different terminology has been used. Now, therefore, Purusha, as we know, is consciousness, pure consciousness, all-pervading consciousness, which Krishna is going to explain that it is eternal and it is changeless principle, right? And he helped us to understand that it is can be compared to space. Okay. So therefore, Prakriti is matter, Purusha is consciousness. And when we put together this Purusha and Prakriti mixture, this is what we call Ishvara, the God that we worship in a form. Is nothing but the Purusha plus the Prakriti. It is consciousness plus matter. That what we worship, we call as Ishvara, is a mixture of Purusha and Prakriti. But one very important thing you must understand, that Purusha and Prakriti also is mixed in this whole creation. One very important thing is, Purusha does not undergo any change. Purusha remains changeless. But Prakriti, which has come from the five elements, and then from the five elements came all the 14 lokas, and then in the 14 lokas, all the living beings and the plants and insects and all these things came, and also the laws of karma will govern this Prakriti. That is what is subject to change. So, how is it subject to change? That's why there is diversity in creation. There are different physical bodies. We are all made of the five same elements. But yet we are of different height, shape, color. Even our minds think differently. Our intellect knowledge is different. The diversity is in what? Prakriti, but not in Purusha. Why is there diversity in Prakriti? Why is there modification, there is diversification in Prakriti? Because of what? Huh? Not okay. Why are the vasanas there? Gunas. Because of the three gunas, which are in Prakriti and not in Purusha. That's why Purusha remains changeless witness, whereas Prakriti is subject to modification, subject to change because of the three gunas in Prakriti. Okay? And what is the role of Purusha? Purusha enlivens this whole Prakriti. It illumines the body, it illumines the mind, it illumines the entire world. Okay? So this is what he wants to say now in verse number 19. If you look at the second line, he says Viddhi. He tells Arjuna Viddhi. Viddhi means know. Know what? Know that anadi, the word anadi means it is beginningless. It has no origin. It has no beginning. Not origin, sorry. It has no beginning. What is no beginning? That ubhav. Ubhav means both. Both Prakriti and Purusha have no beginning at all. So this is a very important thing. That both Purusha and Prakriti have got no beginning. Why both Prakriti and Purusha have got no beginning? Because both are the powers of God. So since God was there with, right from the beginning, these are His two Shaktis, the Purusha and the Prakriti. That's why there is no beginning at all for both Purusha and Prakriti also, both. Now, Prakriti we can understand is like a seed, which also came from God. But God is unmanifest, right? So how did the manifest world come from the unmanifest? Is it possible? If the seed came from God, God is unmanifest, how did from nothing come something? Huh? How? From nothing, God is unmanifest, right? There is no colors, shape, size, form, nothing at all. Yet we have this whole creation that came from the seed came from God. So in the, there's an Upanishad called the Chandogya Upanishad. And there's one particular chapter 6 which explains a very beautiful story that there was a sage called Udalaka. And he wanted to, his son Swateku came and asked him. He said, how did this creation come from nothing? So the easiest way, the father told him, you go and take, how did the formless come from, how did the forms come from the formless? So the father told him, you go and bring the jackfruit, pluck a jackfruit and come. So he said, okay, now you have the jackfruit. He told the son, break open the jackfruit. What do you see? Son said, I see the seed. Okay, break open the seed. What do you see? I see nothing. So if from that nothing inside the seed can come the fruit, can come the branch, can come the flowers and everything, the roots, therefore you can understand how from nothing something can come. If we open up the seed, we cannot see anything. But yet from that nothing came something. So that's how we should understand how from emptiness or from nothing came this entire creation. So that's why Krishna says here, Prakritim cha, the word cha means and, Purusha, Ubhav, both are what? They have one common feature. That is, they are both anadi. They both do not have a beginning. Right? So this mixture of, that's why it is, when people ask when did the world begin, very difficult to explain. Because, yes, like unless you can answer whether the chicken came first or the egg came first. Did the seed come first or the tree came first? So it is difficult. It is right from the beginning, since God was there, Purusha and Prakriti existed. Okay. Now, what is the some of the explanation about this? He says in the third line, Vikarams. Vikara means the effects or the modifications or the changes. Okay? So like from that seed, the Prakriti, all the modifications came. So you have got space, you got fire, you got earth, you got water, you got animals, insects, etc. All these varieties you have, all these varieties came from where? Cha gunams. It is because of the three gunas. All the modifications that you see, that means all of us have different shape, size, color, etc. And again, everything has got a property, like fire has got heat, ice has got cold, etc. Eyes have got a property to see, ears have got property to hear. All that is due to the three gunas. So the vikarams, the modifications, the changes, the diversification we see in creation is due to the three gunas. And where have the three gunas come from? So the next line he says, the word prakriti sambhavan, the fourth line. Sambhavan means these gunas were born out of prakriti. Thus from prakriti gave birth to the three gunas itself. They are contained, actually what it means is they are contained in the three gunas. And that's why they are able to modify. So now, you see the similarity between prakriti and purusha is what? What is the similarity? Both are beginningless. What is the difference? In this verse is explained. One is changing, one is non-changing. Right? So there are similarity, it is both are beginningless. However, there are differences that one is changing and one is non-changing. But in the Upanishads, they give us more differences to understand the difference. Okay? And four main differences we must note between Prakriti and Purusha. The first, of course, is that Purusha consciousness principle is changeless. Okay, that is the very first point which is made here. And the Sanskrit word used for changeless or not subject to modification is called nirvikaraha. Vikar, you see the word vikar? So we say nirvikaraha. Right? In the third line you saw the word vikar. So nirvikaraha means it is not subject to change or modification. Whereas prakriti is always vikara, it is constantly changing, right? Even the five elements, they change into what you call the creation. So everything is constantly changing. Body is changing, isn't it? Body is changing, mind?
Changing.
Intellect? Changing. Every aspect of prakriti is changing. What is the second difference between purusha and prakriti? Purusha is said to be Chetana Tattvam. Chetana means it has consciousness. It is a living principle. Chetana Tattvam. And therefore Prakriti is what? You just add the A in front of Chetana, becomes what? A Chetana Tattvam. It has no life. It is inert. So that is the second difference. One is consciousness with life, one is inert. Third is, Purusha is free from all attributes. There is no form, color, shape, sound, etc. in Purusha. That's why Purusha, we cannot worship. Who to offer flowers to? Who to sing bhajans to? It has got no shape, no sound, no color at all. Whereas Prakriti, that God we worship as Ishvara, is Prakriti with the three gunas, has got all the attributes. Okay? So, at gunas are in Prakriti, but they are not in Purusha. That's why Purusha has got no attributes, but Prakriti has got all the attributes. And the fourth most important difference between Purusha and Prakriti is that Purusha has got independent existence, whereas Prakriti is dependent on Purusha for its existence. Without Prakriti, Purusha exists. But without Purusha, Prakriti cannot exist. Okay? So Prakriti borrows, what we mean to say is Prakriti borrows its consciousness from Purusha. That's why it has life. It can exist. So these are the four important things, and basically what he has explained in this introductory verse in 19 is just that. That both Prakriti and Purusha are beginningless, but one is vikarams, is subject to modification because of the gunas. Okay? So then we go on to verse number 20. And this is very important. See, all these verses are actually, chapter 13, very much connected to the Upanishads. So the knowledge of the Upanishads is basically condense into this whole chapter 13. It's a very profound chapter. So all these verses are very important to understand the relationship between Purusha and Prakriti. Okay. What else is the relationship here between Purusha and Prakriti? So if you look at the word Karya, Karya here means the gross body. Karya, the gross body, or rather the whole gross creation that we can see, okay, all the physical bodies, what we call in Sanskrit as Stula Shariram, okay, this gross body is Stula. Even the brain is also Stula Shariram. You must understand, because it's gross, you can see it, right, it is also Stula Shariram. But while the brain is Stula Shariram, it is a visible part, but behind the brain there is the Sukshma Shariram, which consists of thoughts. Thoughts are Sukshma, they are subtle, but the brain is the Stula Shariram, which is gross. Okay? So here what he is saying, Karya, which is the gross creation, Karana, the word Karana means the subtle bodies, okay? So in this whole creation consists of the subtle and the gross bodies. Kartritve means what we call Kartritve means the creation of the agent of creation. Okay, for this gross and subtle body, Kartritve means the agent of creation for all this is what is Prakriti. So the raw five elements are the very cause that have created this body, they have created the mind, they have created the thoughts. Everything has come from Prakriti. Prakriti is the cause of both the gross and the subtle bodies. Karya is gross body, Karana is the subtle body. Okay? So, why is that? Because as we understood earlier, Prakriti is the seed of all creation. Everything can only come out from Prakriti. So whether it is your gross body or subtle body, everything comes from creation. Then what does Purusha do? He is the most laziest person, doesn't create anything. See, I heard in one certain language the word Purusha means husband also. So who's the most laziest person in the house, reading newspapers and watching TV? Just joking. So there's Purusha. Purusha doesn't do anything. He sits quietly there. It is Prakriti that creates everything, that creates, okay? So Purusha does not do anything, but once the body and mind are created, the Karya and Karana are created, Purusha enlivens this entire creation. And not only it enlivens, it gets contained, it gets enclosed in this body-mind complex. So it enlivens, it also gets enclosed. Now, once it gets enclosed, what happens now? It's very simple. Supposing we have space, total empty space. We cannot do anything with the space. So what we do, we put a wall. Once we put the wall, we call this kitchen space. We call this dining room space, we call this living room space. Once you put the wall and you call this with various names, now what happens? What's the difference now? It's limited, okay, what else? Space initially, nothing you could do with it. Now you put a wall, you call this dining room, living room. It becomes functionable, right? So when the different bodies are created, right? So what happens when Purusha enlivens, the bodies therefore perform different functions. That's what is basically happening. Just like same way we put walls and we create. So it becomes functionable now. Okay? In a closed space. So means what? It is available for transaction. Once the Purusha occupies the body, it is now available for transaction. Now, very careful to know when the Purusha is in the body, it is also known as the Jiva. So that difference between Jiva and Atman, have I explained this before? What is the difference between Jiva and Atman? Why do we say jiva, we say atman, and sometimes we say jivatman? There is a difference. Did I explain this before? We all know what's the difference between jiva and atman. No? I don't know whether I've explained before. Okay, anyway, what is the difference between jiva and atman? We must be very clear on this. Jiva we say soul, Atman we also say soul. So how can there be two souls?
Jiva is communication when it's in the body. When it's the body is jiva. Atman is all pervading everywhere.
So Atman is all pervading means it's also out and in the body. Because you remember what he said, it is far away, it is near also. So Atman is in the body, it is out of the body. But there is also a thing called jiva. So to understand this very simply, we just look at an example of the sun and the rays of the sun, and we take the mirror, and there is a glass, this is a mirror, and there is a what we call a reflected sun here. This reflection is known as jiva. That means jiva can only exist as long as there's a body, as long as there's a frame and a mirror, right? So once there is no frame, no mirror, there is no more reflection, there is no more jiva. So jiva is a what we call a reflection of the consciousness. When this So what happens now? The sunlight is the Atman, which is all pervading. So it is there in the reflection also, and it is also part and parcel of the sun. This we can call as Brahman. Now, the interesting thing is, we always say that at time of death, Atman cannot travel. So what travels? Jiva travels. How does jiva travel? So to understand that, again very simple, let's take this as this is the wood, right? This is a frame, wood frame. This is the glass. What does the wood frame represent? The body, the gross body. Okay? This represents the gross body. The glass represents? What does the glass represent? Which is the subtle body. Okay, this we can call as the stula sharira. This one is the sukshma sharira plus the karana sharira. That is two there. Now, what happens at point of death? The wooden frame, the cross body, we cremate. It's gone. What happens to the sukshma and karana sharira? So, what we do now? This thing is gone. Okay? The subtle and the causal body remain, right? So, what happens now? The subtle and causal body need to function. So what happens now? You take a new wooden frame. This is a new body. This is a wooden frame. You take the glass and you put it into a new wooden frame. The new body is there. The reflection, the jiva travels with the mirror. Okay. So that's why they say that is what is traveling is the jiva. Never the Atman. Why? Because Atman is everywhere. He cannot travel.
Atman
forms
the medium.
Sorry?
He forms as a medium for transportation.
Atman basically does nothing. He's just like the rays of the sun, it just shines, right? Mm-hmm. So, what is reflected now here in the new body, once this mirror, that means your sukshma, your karana, sharira now move to the new body, the reflection comes there. The jiva follows that.
that reflection. It's just like you take this glass and you put it here, the reflection will follow along with the glass. So the jiva will be completely destroyed when there is the ignorance is gone, that I am the, right now we are jiva identifying with body. We should be Atman identifying with Brahman. Once that realization happens, this one is gone. Once there is no more glass, there is no more reflection, this is gone. What remains? Only Atman. Right? So we must be very clear, understand the distinction between this jiva and this Atman.
So the reflection is only because we identify?
Yes, the reflection will keep on existing as long as you identify with the body. That's why the sukshma and the karana sharira will always be there. The sukshma and karana will be destroyed once that ignorance is removed and we identify with Brahman. There is no more sukshma, there is no more karana. So what happens? That glass is gone. Glass is gone means there is no more reflection. There is no more jiva. So jiva is only a, what we call a deluded, the deluded soul. The ignorant soul. Right? Okay, so now you understand when he says karya karana kartritve hetu prakriti uchate. Uchate is said that prakriti, the raw material or the matter, is the cause of all subtle and gross bodies. All the subtle and gross bodies have been created with due to prakriti, or they came from prakriti. Okay? And thus the body is now available for transaction. So that means now we must understand the Atma does not become jiva. There are two separate entities in this body. In the Upanishad it is very clearly mentioned, it is like two birds sitting on a tree. There is the Atman bird, there is the jiva bird. The tree represents the body. The difference is Atman bird is very clear, it is looking at the Brahman or God, the sun. So it is not entangled in this body. Whereas the jiva bird is looking at the fruit in the tree. So the jiva starts eating the fruit of the tree. Some of the fruit is sweet, some of the fruit is bitter. Meaning what?
Sukha.
Huh? Sukha. What? Sukha. Sukha, yes. So some of the experience are pleasurable, some are not so pleasurable. And thus the jiva keeps on identifying with the fruit and the tree. Whereas the Atman in the body is the pure consciousness, the witness. It is looking at the other world, eating away the fruit, but it does not touch the fruit at all. It looks at only Brahman. So we must be very clear on the distinction between the Atman and the Jiva. So that's why he says, because of this creation of the gross and the subtle body, what happens? In the next line he says, you see the word Sukha Dukha. Sukha Dukha in the third line. And the word Bhoktritve is in the fourth line. Bhoktritve means the experience of the Sukha Dukha belongs to who? All these various what we call experiences that we are going through, favorable, unfavorable, raga, dvesha, kama, krodha, lobha, all these kind of conditions belong to who? But who is, it belongs to the body, it belongs to the body, but who is what we call experiencing all this? It is the Purusha. The Purusha is the experiencer, because why? It has life, it is consciousness. The body actually is not experiencing it, it is the Purusha that is experiencing it. But what is the difference? It is not affected. The Purusha is able to experience, but it is not affected. The Purusha is the witness. It knows that you are happy, it knows you are sad, but it is not affected at all. So what does this verse tell us? All the gross and the subtle body has come from Prakriti, and because of Purusha there, the body is enlivened, the mind is enlivened. Because it is enlivened, it experiences various kind of sukha-dukha experiences, which is also experienced by the Purusha, but the difference is the jiva, the deluded soul, which I told you about, that gets affected. The Purusha remains the weakness. Yes, you had something to ask. Now, I know it's a bit complicated. You got to really think about it very clearly. Sometimes these things cannot understand. You got to go back and read it also. Yes, sorry. Jiva is the deluded one who thinks I am doing. So when the jiva identifies and says I am the doer, it is the ego. Ego is the one that influences the mind. Now actually what we are talking about is the mind. The mind, because it is devoid of knowledge, it is in a state of ignorance, it thinks I am doing everything. Whereas once this mind is uplifted by knowledge, it understands I am not the doer, I am just the witness, then it is free of all the sukha-dukha experiences. So the whole fundamental issue comes back to the mind. Once the mind is clear of this ignorance, then we look at upon every transaction in life as a witness. Okay? So that's why, as I say, very profound, very deep verses, and chapter 13 is something we have to really read properly. Okay? So experiences belong to the body, to the prakriti, but there is Purusha also experiences, but it is not affected. Okay? Verse 21. So here it says, now, how does the Purusha become a witness? Okay? How does the Purusha become a witness? This is explained in verse number 21. So what it says here, the word prakriti, now we can try to understand prakriti as our body. It makes easier for us to understand. Understand prakriti as this body, this mind, this intellect. Okay? Therefore, this body, this mind is a product of what? Product of prakriti. Okay? This body, this mind is a product of prakriti. And enclosed in this, you see the word prakriti. Prakartishto. Okay, the word prakartishto. So here prakartishto means prakati. Okay, what is the first word? Purusha. Okay, Purusha is the consciousness. Purusha, prakartishto means Purusha is seated in prakriti. That is why it is able to experience everything that this body is experiencing, that this mind is experiencing. So the very first line says, Purusha prakatishto. Purusha is seated in prakriti. That is why it is able to enliven your body, it enlivens your mind, and at the same time it experiences all the sukha-dukha experiences. So here it is very beautifully explained that this Purusha is enclosed in the prakriti. Okay? And therefore he says, second line, bhukte, it experiences. It becomes the sakshi, it is the witness. We must be very careful when the word bhunte is used. When we say experiences, does not mean it gets affected. It experiences, it's just like today you're sitting in your house and you hear a loud bang outside and you have parked your car, your brand new car outside. So you rush out, with fear, and suddenly you realize that it is your neighbor's car that got banged. So what happened? You experience it, but you are not affected by it. Because why? It doesn't belong to you. So that is the nature of the Purusha. It is bhunte, experiences, means it becomes the witness. Witness, okay? So bhunte does not mean it experiences, but it is the witness. It does not do any action. And therefore in the next line it says, these gunas, now the word gunas are there, all these properties, the qualities of the three gunas, guna, prakriti, jan, gunan, the gunas are born from prakriti. Okay? The three gunas are born from prakriti. So that means the sakshi is the witness, the Purusha is the witness. Whatever is going on, now because of the three gunas, depending which guna dominates. If sattvic guna dominates in you, your thoughts are pure, right? Who is witnessing these pure thoughts? The Purusha is witnessing. If rajasic gunas dominate your mind, you have selfish thoughts. But all these three gunas, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, are affecting your mind, which is prakriti. The Purusha is just the experiencer. Okay? So the three gunas are constantly modifying your mind, your body, etc. But the problem is, we do not know this. When we lack this knowledge, what we do is we identify with the mind, we identify with the body, and we say, I am happy, I am sad, I am rich, I am so and so, I am poor. We keep on identifying with all the transactions. So therefore, the mind has got to be removed from this ignorance. Right now, the mind is in a state of ignorance. And the only thing that can remove ignorance is what?
Knowledge.
Knowledge. So knowledge will remove the ignorance to make you realize what is your real identity, whether you are the Purusha or Prakriti. And it is very easy when we sit in the class to realize this, I am Purusha, I am Atman, then you leave the classroom and you get in your car, I am Purusha, and then before you reach the house, I am Prakriti. So why is there this conflict, why suddenly this knowledge goes off? Why can't we hold this knowledge? Like we come here, we are so okay, we are at peace, I'm Purusha, I'm not affected, you know. Then outside you go, then somebody cuts in your car, and then suddenly all the Purusha has gone, suddenly Prakriti. Okay, you can say all the vasanas, gunas, but what is the root problem here? Why is it it's not that we do not know Atman. We know, okay, Atman is there. We can accept I am the Atman. But why we cannot continuously adopt this position that I am the witness? Because of the 20 qualities that Krishna spoke about. When we lack those 20 qualities, when we don't have these 20 qualities in abundance, which he spoke about as jnanam, when we are lacking this, this is why we are unable to be convinced. We know, but we are not convinced. Conviction can only come when we have these 20 qualities that purify our mind, that focus our mind, and until then it becomes a conviction. So it is not that we don't have knowledge, we have knowledge. What we don't have is conviction. And we can only get conviction when we cultivate the 20 qualities. Now imagine if you have pride, you have ego. How are you going to identify with Atman? See, all that he spoke about, Amanitvam, Adambitvam, all you have, all those you don't have, you have all the 20 negative qualities. How are you going to identify yourself as the Atman, as the all-pervading consciousness? So these are the barriers to our spiritual growth. Okay. So now he says the gunas are born out of Prakriti. And if you look at the third line now, karanam, the cause of these gunas sangha means when the gunas come into contact with Prakriti, that is why we have all these experiences of sukha, dukkha, happiness, sorrow, what we call greed, anger, pride, etc. All this comes because of the reason that the gunas are in contact with our prakriti. They influence our body, they influence our mind, they influence our intellect. That's why in the very next chapter, he is going to explain about all the three gunas. How sattvic guna affects us, how rajasic guna affects us, how tamasic guna affects us. And what is the goal of the spiritual seeker? First of all, I should rise from tamas to rajas. Then I should rise from rajas to sattva. And then finally, I should transcend sattva. So that is what is called gunatit. That is the question Arjuna will ask. What are the marks of a person who has transcended all the three gunas? And in chapter 14, Krishna will give us all the qualities of a spiritual seeker who has transcended all the three gunas. What are the qualities? So this all is linked into the chapter 14. So because of our wrong identification, we claim I am the Prakriti and not the Purusha. Because we get entangled in these three gunas. They influence us. All the three gunas influence us. Our thoughts, our behavior, our actions are all influenced by these three gunas. Now how do we raise ourselves from tamasic to rajasic? Through karma yoga, through activity, through selfless action. Then from rajasic to sattva? Through upasana yoga, by directing our mind towards God. And then how we transcend sattvic guna? Through jnana yoga, through knowledge. So all the three yogas are there to help us rise from one guna to another guna. That's why in our scripture sometimes we ask, why they tell us, you know, that Shivratri, Navratri, these so many festivals are there, so many times we are fasting, go to temple, go to this, don't do this, do, you know, go to temple, break kokra. What is the purpose of all this? Remind ourselves of God. Why we do so many festivals? You take out Hindu calendar, no, every week there is something on it. You know. You know, this festival, that festival, this festival, every day there is something other. Why so many festivals? Then they tell you, go to temple, do this, break coconut, light fire, do this, do that, keep fast. Then we ask, why? The idea is to make a tamasic person rajasic. Because how do you motivate a person who doesn't want to do anything? Okay, at least go to temple, go and light one lamp, go walk around the altar 2-3 times, at least do something. You might not know, you might not understand what you are doing. Doesn't matter, you do. Okay, today Shivratri. What to do Shivratri? Stay awake the whole night. Okay, give prasadam. So we'll be active. So from tamas we are pushed to rajas because of all these various spiritual activities. And then from rajas, a person who does selfish actions, is slowly, selfish action means the mind is what they call a mind that is running in different directions. It's a very, a tamasic mind is a very active mind, hyperactive mind. So how do you bring this tamasic mind to focus on God? Upasana yoga, chanting of mantras, what we call saying your prayers, etc. All this is to make the rajasic mind more concentrated. And finally, when the rajasic mind is more concentrated, then with knowledge it becomes sattva. And then from sattva it transcends also. So that's why we understand the purpose of all these rituals, prayers, etc. They are basically dealing with the three gunas. They are transforming us in a different way. And that's why Krishna also will speak about ahara. Food also is very important. The type of food we eat also influences the gunas. That's why we are asked to take to vegetarian food. There is a reason, because it transforms the gunas in us. Our thought patterns change. Our desires change. So it has an effect on our personality also. Okay? So therefore he says, because of this association of the gunas, we get entangled with this body, we get entangled with all the various transactions of life. What happens? Sat, if you look at the last line, sat, asat, yoni, janmashu. There are four words there. Sat means good, asat means evil, yoni means womb, janmashu means birth. Because of this entanglement, you go through various kind of experiences, you identify with these experiences. This is the main reason why we have to come back for repeated birth after birth after birth. Either you take a good birth or you take a evil birth. Good birth here means what? Good birth means what? Not only human body, but you have a lot of punyam. So you get a human body, you get the right environment for spiritual growth, you get right parents, you get healthy body. All that is due to the punyam. And papam, evil wombs means because of the papam, you get a unhealthy body, you get a wrong environment, wrong parents, wrong siblings, everything there is created because of this. Because of our identification with the gunas, we identify with all our transactions, then we get entangled in them, and thus we keep on taking repeated births. So, sat asat yoni janmashu, because of our very ignorance, birth after birth we come back. Therefore, how do we disengage ourselves from this? That will be explained in chapter 40. That is basically how to rise above the three gunas. Okay. Now we come to verse 22. Now in this verse 22 now, Krishna says, now therefore we have to start slowly training our mind to identify ourselves with what? Purusha. We have to keep on identifying ourselves with Purusha. So who is this Purusha? We should also know. Who is this Purusha? Who? I have to constantly remind myself that I am this Purusha. So now the qualities of the Purusha are given here in verse number 22, and six characteristics of the Purusha are given. So the first characteristic is upadrashta, constantly reminding ourselves that we are upadrashta, we are the witness. We are observing all the experiences of the body. And look at the word upadrashta. Drashta means witness. Upa means what? See, drashta itself means witness, but he puts there upadrashta. Means very near. That witness is not some god, some sitting heaven or somewhere. It is the very consciousness which is in you. So the word upa means it is the witness within you. You are not witness within you. You are that witness. It is never far away from matter. It is always there. Right? Then what else is this purusha? Hanumanta. Hanumanta means it also is the permitter. Permitter means what? It blesses the body, it blesses the mind, it gives consciousness to the body and mind, because body and mind is made of matter, it is inert, it has got no life. So, Hanumanta means it blesses. It provides life to the body, to the mind, but at the same time, it permits, means it allows the body and the mind to do all the actions, it does not interfere. It does not interfere. It allows the body to function. So your thoughts, whatever you think, whatever your personality, the Purusha only blesses you with life, but you decide what you want to think, what type of desires you want to have. So it is also the Hanumanta. Okay. Third quality, it is the Bharata. Bharata means it is the sustainer, it is the nourisher. So just like electricity nourishes the light bulb, it is also the nourisher of this body. All the appliances are nourished by electricity, just like all the ornaments are nourished by gold, all these bodies, mind, etc. are nourished by this Purusha. Next quality is Bhokta. Bhokta means it is the experiencer. All the varieties of experiences that are taking place in your body, in your mind, it is also experiencing, but the only difference is it does not get affected. And finally, see, this Purusha is identified here also as the Maheshwara. There is no difference from this Purusha in your body and the Mahaishwara, the total consciousness. This Atman and Ishvara are one and the same. There is no difference. Like what I draw on the board just now, sun and sunlight, there is no difference. Okay? So the Atman also is the same as the Mahaishwara. And then he gives another quality, Paramatma. It is the Supreme Self. It is also known, this Atma within the body is also known as the Paramatma, the Supreme Self. Consciousness. So you may ask, why so many names? You know, Upadrashta, Numanta, Bharata, Bhokta, Maheshwara, Paramatma. The same one Atman is given so many names. Why so many names? Huh? different functions. Yes, that's true, that's very true. It has different functions. It is the witness, it is the observer, it is the permitter. So just like we also, when we have different functions, in the house you are called mother, you go to the office, you are called a manager, you go and play badminton, then you are called a badminton player. The different functions that you do, the different names identify the different functions. That's all. So Atma from the standpoint of the body, Para Atma from standpoint of universal consciousness. The same Atma in the body, we call it Atma. The same Atma when it is identified with totality is called Paramatma. That's all. It is one and the same with different functions. And where is this consciousness? The last line he says, Dehe. Dehe means body. Asmin Dehe, in this body. It is not sitting somewhere far away. This Atman is sitting right in this body. The Purusha is there. It is not in Kailash, it is not in Vaikuntha, it is not somewhere else. It is sitting right here in your body. And therefore he says, this Purusha is referred to all this, right? This is what he's saying. This Purusha in the last line, Ukto means it is known as by all these names, Upadrashta, Numanta. This Purusha which is seated in your body is known by different names. So this is what, in fact, these are the verses which we should constantly contemplate upon. These verses and the verses given in chapter 2, if you recall, verse 11 to 25. Chapter 2, verses 11 to 25 are the very essence of this knowledge of Atma. So constantly our goal is to keep on reading these verses, reminding ourselves, so that we can keep on focusing ourselves on this, our higher identity. Because it's very easy, as I said, to forget about this. When you get involved 6 days back in the world, again you are involved. Again Saturday you come for class, I am Atma, but 6 days I am. So it's very easy. So how do we reinforce? The only way to reinforce is keep on reading, keep on reading, keep on reminding. And how do I know, once this knowledge kicks in, how do I know that this knowledge is there with me? Is there a way to know? Once I'm able to look upon all my transactions as Atma, are we able to know? Are we able to know that we are living this knowledge? Okay. Look at chapter 4, verse 39. Page 96. Chapter 4, verse 39, page 96. So first of all, he said, when you start the spiritual journey, what do you need? One moksha straight away. Faith. Shraddha one. You see the word Shraddha. Before we start the spiritual journey, we need faith. Faith is very, very important. Why? Because I have not experienced yet. Whereas science says what? You experiment for me, show me, then I have faith. But spirituality says what? Have faith first, then you will experience. So the very first word he says there, Shraddhavam. That means a one endowed with faith. What is the benefit or result? Shraddhavam labhate jnanam. You will get knowledge if you have faith. Meaning you will be convinced of the knowledge only if you have faith. Otherwise you will just treat this as some knowledge and which you can, just go about boasting about it here and there. I attend Gita classes Saturday, I can repeat chapter 12, chapter 15, I can quote this verse, that verse. So first have faith. Then that labhate means I will attain knowledge only if I have faith. It will become a conviction in me. Okay. Then what happens? The third line, jnanam labdva param shanti. From knowledge, once I am established in the knowledge, I have conviction, and I am able to see all the transactions of life from the standpoint as a witness, what do I attain? Param Shanti. That peace of mind is our, what we call the result of this knowledge. peace of mind can only come once we identify with our higher self, when we are able to see all the experiences of life as the witness. So the more and more tranquility of the mind you enjoy is the sign that you are slowly absorbing this knowledge. Okay? Shraddhavam is a very famous verse in the Gita. Okay, now we look at verse number 23. So therefore, in verse number 23, he is concluding the discussion about Prakriti and Purusha. And the aim of every spiritual seeker is what? What is the ultimate aim of every spiritual seeker? Everybody wants moksha very fast. Before you get moksha, this. Realization of what? Purusha, Prakriti, Viveka. First you must be able to discriminate between what is matter, what is consciousness. And then you must identify with your consciousness. So, first thing a spiritual seeker needs is the knowledge for Purusha, Prakriti, Viveka. To know what is changing is Prakriti and what is changeless is Purusha. What is world? Prakriti. What is body? Prakriti. What is mind? Prakriti. Then, where is the Purusha? What are thoughts? Prakriti also. Because why? Changing. Then, where is this Purusha? So, how to know who is this Purusha? World is Prakriti. Body is Prakriti. Mind is Prakriti. Thoughts of Prakriti, then who is this Purusha? Does he exist or not? You know what were your thoughts yesterday. You know what you are experiencing now. You know what you experienced last week. Who is this experiencer who knows? That is the Purusha. I do not know what you are experiencing. You do not know what I am experiencing. You are experiencing your thoughts. You have experienced the changes in your body. Hair went from black to white. Teeth started dropping one by one. Right? We are experiencing. Did the experiencer change? Experiencer doesn't change. The experience changes. The witness to these changes is the Purusha. So I know that I was sad yesterday. I know that I'm happy today. I know I had a good sleep yesterday. So all that knower, the experiencer, that is the Purusha. And that is the goal of the spiritual seeker, to understand this fact very clearly. Okay. So, how can we now accomplish that the scriptures are our guide? First of all, we have to take the knowledge from the scriptures. And then take this knowledge and keep on negating. What is changing? I understand is Prakriti. Keep on negating. What is changing? Keep on negating. And that's how you arrive at the Purusha, which is not subject to change. So now here Krishna says, evam veti, evam yaha veti. Yaha, the one who veti, the one who knows, is a liberated person. The one who knows very clearly the distinction between Purusha and Prakriti, such a person, what should he know? So look at the second line. Purusham Prakriti Saha Guna. You must know about Purusha, you must know about Prakriti, and you must also know about Gunas, which cause all the modifications. Why are my thoughts changing? Why is my knowledge changing? Why is my body changing? It's because of the Gunas. So I should know, the person should know the difference between Purusha, Prakriti and the Gunas also. And what is the greatest advantage? Once you know this, that Prakriti is constantly changing, I am the changeless Purusha, what is the greatest advantage? Once I can accept this, I am convinced of this, what is my greatest advantage? I am never affected by any changes. because I don't identify with the changes. Whatever is changing is not me, so I am not affected by the changes. We can only realize this once we are convinced with the knowledge. So that will be our greatest advantage. You accept all changes as a fact of life. And therefore Krishna says, what happens to such a person who has come to accept that I am the Purusha and not the Prakriti? He says, one who has clearly understood the difference, Vartamano means such a person continues to live. He is still experiencing, he is still interacting with society. Sarvata, in every manner soever, he continues to live. So what does it mean by in every way he continues to live? One who knows that I am not the changing Prakriti, I am the changeless Purusha, continues to live. What does he mean by that? So one who has the right attitude that every situation in life is going on and I am the witness is not affected. Continues to live as what? As a Jivan Mukta, or as what Krishna described in chapter 2, the Sthita Prajna, the last 18 verses of chapter 2. That's how a person interacts. And we will see all the qualities of such a person in chapter 14, the same qualities as Krishna gave in chapter 2 also. So that will be the greatest advantage. You carry on to live irregardless of the external situations. So that's what we call actually total surrender. See, what do you mean by surrender actually? Everybody uses this word surrender, surrender. What do you mean by surrender actually? Surrender to the law of karma. What do you mean by surrender? Practically, what do you mean? See, when two armies fight, who surrenders? The weaker army surrenders. When the weaker army surrenders to the conquering army, what happens? Okay, then what happens? Whatever the stronger army gives you food to eat, you eat. Do you complain and say, I don't want this, I want that? Whatever position the conquering army puts you in, you accept. That is called surrender, right? You surrender to that army. So they, whatever conditions they put you in, you accept. So when you surrender to the Lord, then you, normally when we pray, what do we say? We don't say, O Lord, may thy will be done. You say, O Lord, may my will be done. So when we surrender means what? May thy will be done. Whatever condition you put me in, whatever situation you give me, whatever experiences you give me in life, I accept. That is called surrender. So when you say you surrender to a higher authority means you follow the dharmic way of life and you accept whatever that comes as part and parcel from the of the law of karma from the Lord. Sorry? No raga dvesha, right? You accept every experience of life. So that's what he means. He lives under any condition, such a person is able to live. And what happens now to such a person? What happens to such a person? He says, he concludes in this verse, Saha Bhuya na Abhijayate. Such a person, na Abhijayate, is not born Bhuya again, attains Videha Mukti. So first you live as what we call Jivan Mukta, you are able to go through every experience of life without being affected, and then at the end of that life, you attain, you do not attain another birth, which is Videha Mukti. You do not come back for another birth. So, Na Abhijayate, Bhuya. Bhuya means again. Upon death, you do not come back for another birth. So, that now is concluded the discussion between Purusha and Prakriti and telling us we should start discriminating and understanding the differences between these two and ultimately conclude that we are the Purusha and not the Prakriti. And then when we come back next week, he will take the concluding verses from 24 to 34, which gives us the sadhana. What is the sadhana we have to go through in order to elevate ourselves slowly from the tamasic to the sattvic state? Okay? We end with a prayer. Vasudeva Sutam Devam. कंस चानुरमर्दनम देवकी परमानंदम कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरु. थैंक यू.
Thank you.